perspectiva de la hija de la víctima, que tiene ya 90 años, que incluso viajó a Buenos Aires para prestar declaración ante la jueza Servini y que ha expresado su deseo de ser enterrada junto a los restos de su padre. Hay que recordar que el gobierno de Mariano Rajoy retiró la financiación pública para exhumar los restos de las víctimas del franquismo, y estos trabajos se producen gracias a donaciones particulares. En concreto, una de ellas es de un sindicato noruego de electricistas. Estaremos pendientes de esta noticia porque en esa fosa común hay otras 20 o 21 personas. Se calcula que los trabajos durarán durante al menos 10 días.
El Pleno de la Suprema Corte de Justicia de México deberá determinar si son inconstitucionales dos artículos del Código Penal del Distrito Federal que activistas, defensores de derechos civiles y humanos consideran son usados para criminalizar la protesta social. Así lo determinó el miércoles la Sala Primera del Máximo Tribunal, que analizó dos casos de amparos contra los artículos 287, que consigna los ultrajes a la autoridad, y el 362, que consigna los ataques a la paz pública.
Este panorama puede ser complejo, porque también intervienen los ministros de la llamada ala conservadora, ministros que son presumiblemente de consigna, como el ministro Medina Mora.
Los amparos fueron presentados por los activistas Gabriel Hernández y Brian Reyes, que fueron detenidos y encarcelados por participar en protestas. Guillermo Naranjo, de la Liga Primero de Diciembre, afirma que la situación es más compleja ahora.
El panorama que nos enfrentamos es más complejo y con mayor responsabilidad, porque de obtener una resolución con 8 votos del Pleno de la Sala, del Pleno de la Suprema Corte de Justicia, esta resolución puede ser vinculante y puede ser aplicada a otros activistas que se encuentran en la misma situación. Por ello consideramos desde la Liga de Abogados Primero de Diciembre que es necesario hacer énfasis en la difusión y visibilización de este tipo de casos.
Gabriela Hernández, conocida en redes sociales como Luna Flores, que pide la inconstitucionalidad del artículo 287 de ultrajes a la autoridad, fue condenada inicialmente a 15 meses de cárcel por presuntamente agredir verbalmente a 2 policías. Ella se mostró decepcionada con la decisión de la primera sala.
Esperaba que se declarara inconstitucional este artículo, que es violatorio de derechos humanos, por el cual yo estuve presa, por el cual varios activistas están presos y algunos otros en proceso. Esperaba justicia, aún no la hay, sigo pidiéndola. Eso es largo. Idea hasta instancias internacionales, y aquí se siguen aferrando a avalar las mentiras de policías y jueces y magistrados de consigna. Ahora estamos viendo que pueden ser ministros de consigna, y eso no lo queremos.
El abogado de Gabriela Hernández, Guillermo Naranjo, asegura que los casos llevados hasta la primera sala de la máxima corte están teniendo fuerte impacto.
Al parecer, el costo político por la resolución de este caso ya está siendo mella, y por eso se ha decidido que no lo resuelva la primera sala, sino que intervengan todos los ministros que integran la Suprema Corte de Justicia.
Frente a la sede de la Suprema Corte de Justicia, un grupo de manifestantes pedía el miércoles declarar inconstitucionales los 2 artículos. Entre ellos estaban familiares de detenidos y personas como Alejandro Lugo Morán, detenido el 1 de diciembre del 2012 en el marco de las protestas en la toma de posesión de Enrique Peña Nieto, aunque él no estuvo presente en las manifestaciones.
No participé en las movilizaciones. Yo iba caminando en la calle, saliendo de mi casa, iba a un restaurante a comer, y soy detenido, golpeado, torturado, ingresado a reclusorio y abusado sexualmente por la policía del DF. De ahí se me imputan el delito de ataques a la paz pública con la agravante de pandilla.
Lugo Morán dice que un amplio grupo de organizaciones nacionales y extranjeras se han pronunciado contra los artículos 287 y 362.
Porque no es una lucha solo de la gente que ha sido detenida por prisión, ya sea política o de conciencia. Se abona los posicionamientos de diversas organizaciones de defensoras de derechos humanos, de la sociedad civil, como el Centro Pro de Derechos Humanos, Fray Francisco de Vitoria, Comité Cerezo, que han pedido y se han pronunciado por la inconstitucionalidad, bueno, en dos sentidos: uno, la inconstitucionalidad de estos artículos, y dos, el uso faccioso y de corte político y de escarmiento que el gobierno de la Ciudad de México, el gobierno de Miguel Mancera, ha hecho de estos delitos. También la Comisión de Derechos Humanos del DF ha emitido recomendaciones.
El activista Germain destaca que en México se encarcela a críticos del gobierno, pero no se persigue a los gobernadores que saquean el erario.
Ahí está Humberto Moreira, ¿no?, en España, detenido, que aquí se llevó inclusive un litigio largo en contra de este exgobernador por el desvío de fondos, por el robo y por el endeudamiento masivo de más de 140 millones de dólares en el estado de Coahuila. Es algo realmente pues atemorizante que estamos siendo nosotros víctimas de robo, de un crimen tan artero como este, que pues en cierto sentido está legalizado por los de la Suprema Corte, por la sala.
Para el Informativo Pacífica, reportó Norma Martínez en la Ciudad de México.
Y aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa, el mismo que es producido gracias a las generosas donaciones de las y los radioyentes. Sus donaciones son siempre bienvenidas en nuestro sitio web www.kpfk.org. Te dejamos en compañía de nuestros colegas de Contragolpe y mañana jueves a la misma hora con los compañeros de Nuestra Voz y después con Enfoque Latino. A nombre de Toshli y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Escuche Nuestra Voz, programa de información, análisis y cultura, donde su voz es la que cuenta. Todos los jueves a las 9:30 a 11 p.m. aquí, en KPFK 90.7 FM Los Ángeles. Nuestra Voz es parte de APE, Asociación de Programadores y Programadoras en Español de KPFK. Y recuerde, les esperamos todos los jueves a las 9:30 de la noche.
Hola, yo soy Gonzalo Rubalcaba y están escuchando KPFK Los Ángeles 90.7 FM y 98.7 FM en Santa Bárbara. Muchas gracias.
Con Gregorio Luque, todos los miércoles 10:30 de la noche. Amor, pasión, arte, poesía, en esta nueva propuesta radiofónica. Recuerde, a las 10:30 de la noche.
Yeah, this is Captain Fred saying you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, best fucking radio station in Santa Cruz. Peace.
Free Radio 101.3 FM, also freakradio.org. In Santa Cruz, this is a pre-recorded show, but not terribly pre-recorded. It's on the same day as it's actually being broadcast, it's being recorded. So if you have any thoughts about it, you're welcome to call in, 423-4833. Name of the show is Bathropes, Piers, Broadsides, Civil Rights for the Poor in Santa Cruz. Stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History. history's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Press your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. Song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And hello out there. I'm Robert Norris, and the number to reach me at, in case you wish to comment on the show or give me some breaking news, which we won't be able to break until Sunday, is 831-423-4833. I am going to be going into some surgery for a while, which will probably cut down on my ability to do current shows, will be cutting down, but I will try to keep up as soon as I can, assuming my enthusiasm and constitution survive, which I expect at least one or the other will. So don't give up hope, and do give a call, 423-4833, if you have some stuff to report. I'm particularly concerned about how people are treated who are poor on the streets, in the businesses, in terms of rentals, and just generally here in the Santa Cruz area. I also cover issues like marijuana, and we're going to be actually having an interview, I'm hoping today, assuming I can squeeze it in, with Mike Boyd, who has sued the city and the county for the marijuana tax, which was passed 2 years ago, which he regards as, and indeed is, a tax on medicine, apparently a no-no in our tax system, and something that is particularly discriminatory against marijuana. With all the upcoming legalization pressure for happening already in Colorado, Oregon, Washington, and Alaska, to some extent, the profiteers are lining up like pigs at a trough, if you forgive the metaphor, no offense meant to the captive swine. And it's a real issue, particularly for poor people who have to deal with fancy prices of profiteers who suddenly have dollar signs glistening in their eyes. Well, they've been there for quite a while, and this is the nature of the system that we are living under, and I mean living under. I'm going to begin by playing an interview with Toby Nixon, or Trouble is my middle name, Toby, as I clumsily call him. I've got a better one, if I can find it, and probably will. He's a guy from, activist from San Jose who travels all over the state, but has mainly been focusing on Santa Cruz recently because of the ongoing Freedom Sleepers movement, Freedom Sleepers weekly protest on
each Tuesday night, rain or shine, storm or fair, you name it, in front of City Hall in Santa Cruz, and the object of the protest, the CORE law that criminalizes homeless people at night when they sleep, the camping laws, specifically the city's ordinance, Municipal Code 6.36010A, for all you legal guys and gals, which makes it illegal to sleep or cover up with blankets after 11 o'clock at night until 8:30 in the morning. Although, ironically, most of the citations issued at that location at City Hall in the last 28 weeks, and there have been 28 weeks of protest, at least on Tuesday nights, have been for being in the park after dark, where park is a nice label that's used to subsume and contain and surround the City Hall complex to immunize it from the pollution and contagion of protest, peaceful protest. You would think that that's exactly where protesters should go, but in order to get rid of those dirty, disreputable homeless, first and then Mayor Mike Rotkin, and then a collusion of mayors, city managers, heads of departments got together and created a criminalization policy by allowing, the city council passed this ordinance over my objections. Not that I'm on the city council or that anyone listens to me, but I spoke up at the time, which allows the head of the Parks and Rec to declare any particular area a closed area and to cite the hours with no restrictions on her power. I mean, it's incredibly broad. And I do wonder if it were ever taken to court whether it would stand for 5 minutes, although, of course, in our courts, friendly as they are to the local police and political establishment, it's probably not a good bet that they'd be overturned. In any case, it's illegal to be at City Hall after 10 o'clock at night or half an hour after City Council closes down if it's having a meeting there of some kind. They've also recently removed the City Council agendas and the agendas of the other allied organizations that are also required to have agendas posted under the Public Meetings or Brown Act to the sidewalk, so that the defense that we were using, and that I think is still quite valid, or was valid until the time the city created a new structure on the sidewalk about 3 or 4 weeks ago, is that you have to be able to look at the agendas in any time of the day or night for a 72-hour period before the time of any particular meeting, because that enables the public to have an understanding of what's coming up at the meeting, whether they should come, what point in the meeting they should come, what they should bring, who they should contact in advance, and so forth. In the age of Internet, you might say, well, you don't need those things. That's, you know, horse and buggy stuff. Perhaps, although not everybody has Internet, particularly poor people, although it's becoming more prevalent wherever you go, and that's a mixed blessing for sure. Both a blessing and not so much a blessing. But the fact is, it's still the law, as far as I know. And the city attorney, in the shape of Reed Galaglia, I probably got his pronunciation wrong, sorry about that, Reed, is refusing to recognize it as a basis for saying, well, we can't really then credit these citations the police have given people, these tickets they've given people, because they claim they're giving them tickets not for sleeping, which they could if they fell asleep, or for camping if they found them, you know, under a tent, which, of course, it's outrageous they could do that, but they could. But they don't want to, you know, raise the awareness of the citizenry that the city is acting in not just an abusive fashion towards its homeless, that's nothing new, but in a fashion that might deny them federal funding. Although that is yet to be seen, if that's really, that threats will be carried out by the Housing and Urban Development by HUD, or whether the federal government will even go a step further and have the Department of Justice sue the city, as it's not actually doing in Boise, Idaho, but it is kind of weighed in on the side of homeless activists who have sued city authorities for criminalizing people at night, taking their property, arresting them for sleeping, and so forth. So in order to avoid that, the city here in Santa Cruz doesn't give out tickets for sleeping to protesters. No, no. because the protesters, I guess the rationale may run, have more resources than homeless people who are just trying to find a place out of the rain and the cold. And, you know, before the next meal or before the next line they have to queue up for or the next waiting list they have to hang around waiting for or ID card at the homeless lack of services center that they have to wait for, protesters have more options, many of them at least to begin with, the Freedom Sleepers, when they started in July, right on the heels of the closure of homeless services, or I should say of walk-in homeless services generally. And they're generally still closed. In fact, while it's true that you can, in theory, walk in to join the Armory program, I don't think you have the same kind of option. Well, I don't know for sure, but I'm wondering if you have the same kind of option that you used to have with the earlier Winter Armory shelter program, where you just walk in and sign up. Here, you got to get past a locked gate with an ID card and some security thugs hanging around. And then you have to compete with the prison realignment folks who have been let out of jail, properly so in many cases, because of the, you know, absurd drug war that's being pursued. And, you know, while it fattened the coffers and the pockets of the prison industry, had little to do with security or safety in the community, or even health of the and welfare of the people involved, or their immediate friends and relatives, but simply a way of, you know, foreclosure funding for police departments and political bang, drums to bang around election time for Annalicia Cube and Take Back Santa Cruz and other groups that are just like to rant and rave about the drug war and how horrible those drugs are, when in fact most toxic drug activity happens around prescription drugs that are prescribed by doctors and so forth. But let's leave all that aside. In any case, there's a guy who comes from San Jose every Tuesday, drawn here by the original Freedom Sleepers, who are still supportive. I write for them. Steve Plage goes down and pats everybody on the back before toddling off to his own neck of the woods in another part of town. But mostly houseless people, unhoused people gather at this rally. And it's mostly a place that's sort of a sanctuary for sleepers that is a so-so sanctuary. That's what I would kind of call it. Because you can't be sure you aren't going to get a ticket for sleeping or harassed in the middle of the night or something of that sort, particularly if you sleep nearby. Ironically, if you sleep directly on the sidewalk and next to Toby Nixon and Blue and others who are sleeping there, and there aren't many of them at this point, or at least there weren't last Tuesday, which was, I guess, day before yesterday, for Freedom Sleep Out 28, you won't get a ticket. At least they haven't, and nobody's gotten tickets there on the sidewalk for weeks, if not months. But people have been getting hassled and even ticketed for sleeping nearby, let's say under the eaves of one of the Greek Orthodox Church, or next to the library, or over at the Civic Auditorium, all of which harms no one. That is to say, their presence, the presence of homeless people harms no one, but simply is a cause for control freak security guards, or if you will, security guards given orders and trying to be dutiful to their masters, to move in and demand people leave, sometimes into the pouring rain, sometimes into the freezing cold, with no legal place to go. This is, somebody tried this at your house, somebody tried this to you on the street when you were, I don't know, waiting for a bus with an umbrella in the bus stop. It would be simple assault, and of course it would be more than that. It would be a form of assault and battery if they touched you. It would be a form of theft, and I guess the word would be theft if they, you know, confiscated your property or started to pick up your property and move it for you. But if you're a poor person, you lose all these rights in Santa Cruz. And this is something that all the good progressives and liberals look the other way around, myself included. I mean, I talk about it, But I'm not out there doing that kind of fight that these freedom sleepers are at least once a week doing, that homeless people are doing 24 hours a day, at least on their own behalf. Anyway, I ran into Toby the next day. We have a meeting of the homeless group, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, every Wednesday at the Sub Rosa Cafe, which is at 703 Pacific, in case you want to jump onto the Huff situation there. It's got free coffee, and it can get pretty spirited, sometimes pretty argumentative. Sometimes we're even shouting at each other. That regularly happens. And it's not the most nerve-calming situation, but we do come up with some interesting ideas and proposals. And I'll be talking about those subsequently. We're going to be doing a protest on Monday, or at least, I guess, Huff folks are. I'm kind of taking it easy, preparing for, as mentioned before, surgery. So I will be, however, lurking in the background, giving encouragement, maybe writing flyers, feebly waving, whatever. And we'll be talking about that in a moment. But let's hear a few words from Toby regarding how the Freedom Sleepout 28 went. That was last Tuesday. And there was a brief city council meeting there at that time to choose commission members. I don't know that that had much bearing on it, but let's hear what Toby has to say about the Freedom Sleepout.
Talking with Toby Dixon, who's involved with the infamous San Jose Homeless Civil Rights Group,
Homeless Advocacy and Action Coalition,
and who also makes his way every week over the hill to do the, now it's the 28th Freedom Sleepout?
Yes, begrudgingly.
Begrudgingly, but with a big grin in the morning.
Yep.
Did you say that the security guard agreed to do with this special fervor today?
Oh, yes. Well, Alex got most of it.
The photographer man?
Yes, Alex Staroshi. We walked over to observe him waking up people at the Civic Center at an ungodly hour this morning. And
were there?
There was like one, maybe two people there.
Mm-hmm. Do we know who the security guard was?
I can't remember his name. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure I got better video this time than last time.
And you were doing some live streaming.
Yes. Alex Taroshi got a really up-close picture of his name tag and possibly his yeah. thing. But, he tried to flashlight. I thought it was particularly funny because the security guard tried to flashlight Alex, and Alex had a more powerful flashlight. Mm. And so he...
Dueling lights?
Yes. The security guard once again called in, and he claimed that we were going to be arrested because what we were doing was illegal harassment and blah, 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 blah. That's what it was.
Did the Santa Cruz Police Department respond in its usual speedy way?
Oh, yes. We're still waiting on them to respond from 3 weeks ago.
So, in other words, they didn't respond to the security guard's plea for help?
No. He wasn't in any immediate danger. I mean, like, it's a camera, not a gun.
Now, did the individuals that the security guard was helpfully waking up, about what time was it, would you estimate?
Probably about 4 o'clock.
And the weather was clear but cool?
Yes.
And what was the response of these folks? Did they leave, the ones that were being wakened, or did they go back to bed?
Yes, they did finally leave.
And did they do that, you know, fairly quickly in response to the security guard, or did they stay for the show?
I don't... There was no police response. He's just...
Right, but did the folks who were woken up stay to observe your confrontation with the guards?
No, they had been there. you know, they weren't, it wasn't like that.
Okay. And how many freedom sleeping stalwarts joined you on the sidewalk last night?
Probably about four or five. There was also people at the Civic Center. There was at least one person at the Civic Center, three people at the Orthodox Church, and I think it's the Women's Center over there, and some woman with a cart was over there.
Now, was anybody adjacent to you on the sidewalk in front of City Hall?
No, not that I saw. Mm-hmm. But the Warming Center took a lot of people.
Now, tell me about the Warming Center. Well, before you do that, were you in a tent last night?
Oh, yes.
And was there any problem from either security guards or police or, I don't know, passersby regarding your tent?
No, I keep hoping that they're going to come by and try to cite me, and I'm going to be like, I'm not going to sign the ticket.
And so, what time did you go to bed?
Probably about midnight.
And was there any food support provided to the group?
Oh, yes. Our lovely Pat Colby provided fried rice. It was awesome.
And did you share that rice with your compatriots?
Everybody that showed up, were all happy for the fried rice.
And I talked to Joe Schultz, and he was very apologetic that he did not come by to provide coffee. Although,
oh yeah,
that's what he said. I said, well, I will advise Toby and Pat that they can contact you in the future, maybe try to arrange something. But you also were mentioning that the Warming Center folks did somehow get involved last night?
Yeah, they took people from, I didn't see, it was behind the pizza place or whatever.
Yeah, it's the Pearl Alley, I believe.
I don't know. They did take a lot of people. They took 60 people or something like that.
And they took them to what, the church on High Street?
I don't know.
Quaker Meeting.
The Quaker Meeting Hall.
Yeah. But Brent was very colorful last night at some point.
Brent Adams, the famous Warming Center man?
Yes. Came by and declared that Freedom Sleepers was dead.
I see. He was sort of a funeral service in a loud voice.
Yeah, yelling. But
are you sure he wasn't saying Freedom Sleepers are great?
You know, I would hope so, but you'll have to ask everybody else, because I think he was like, yeah. So there's corroborative evidence that he is a. Anyway, so we're not opposed to
the Warming Center.
The Warming Center,
but some of the Warming Center. Not, I think probably most Warming Center people aren't opposed to you.
No, but I think he should have better social skills.
You're talking about Brent Adams.
Yeah.
I think Brent has a very particular sort of perspective on this. But Pushback Pat, you yourself were fried ricing it up last night, and here you are again this morning, although I know it's not your usual morning schedule. Any reports from last night?
I saw a lot of police cars go by. They only had one first false alarm guard. It was pretty low key. There was
no Klieg lights, no thingies on the parking meters.
No videotaping, and then lying that they don't have any videotape. It was pretty calm, and it was kind of nice that people did stay there instead of going to the Warming Center. It showed support.
How many people stayed?
Well, when I was there, I'd say there was like six or seven. Around Toby, and then I saw like six at the Civic Center, and I saw some at the library and some at the Greek Orthodox Church. So I'd say in total I saw 20 or more, and it was there.
Did Lawrence or Blue show up? I know he's been
up for there. He went to bed early. Mm-hmm. I thought it was Toby, and I kept saying, Toby, you're going to bed early? And he kept saying I couldn't understand at first, but it finally got clear. Like, shut up, I'm sleeping, and I'm not Toby.
I see. Now, what about there's been some concern that folks come by, sample the coffee and the food, although I understand there wasn't much coffee last night.
There wasn't any coffee.
No coffee last night. And then they sort of move on, sort of grazing. And this is a criticism by some, anyway, that there's a these ragamuffin homeless types are not really helping the protest, blah, blah, blah.
Well, these ones hung out there for a while. We need to make them new signs. Next month I'm going to make them signs and laminate them so that they can go through the...
So they'll be electrified and flashing in different colors.
Maybe I'll have them flashing rainbow lights or something, depending on the funding. And but they hung out for a while and supported. They didn't just eat and run. And I don't blame them. You know, when you can go to a warming center, why not go there?
Now, was there any response in the morning? I'm asking this both you and Toby, from the staff of the city who. Currently, actually, I think they're due to show up next week in a hearing accusing activist Keith McHenry, who is a sometime participant in the Freedom Sleeper movement, of saying, what was it, you fucking pussy, or you cowardly cunt, or you foolish person, some kind of exclamation of a hostile sort toward Scott Collins, the assistant to the assistant city manager.
I haven't witnessed that at all. I know that Keith was trying to get Scott Collins to come and confirm that there was no trash or feces or urine.
Yeah, I'm not looking for a kind of an examination of what happened. I'm wondering, has there been anything new that happened this time?
No, but, you know, they can always make up stories like they usually do.
And so did the mayor come by and ask how everyone slept that night?
Not that I saw.
Mayor Matthews, one of her.
Oh, does she do that?
I am not aware she's ever done that, actually.
Maybe she'll invite us to come and sleep in her yard there on Walnut.
Or possibly at her historic Zazu Pitts house next to Jack's Hamburgers. You never can tell.
Yeah.
Anything else that anyone else wants to add about what happened last night at the Freedom Sleep Out 28?
I think it's really important to keep them up because they hate them so much. And when
they being?
The police and the city. So it must be making some mark, because they so badly, they've torn up the lawn, they had rented those Klieg lights, they've torn up out, you know, an orange tree that had oranges. They've just gone crazy. They built a new kiosk so that they're not in violation of the Brown Act. So they're just really, they don't want anybody there. Because they know technically it's constitutionally protected, even though they try to make it seem like it's an illegal activity.
And we've been talking with...
Pushing Back Pat.
And also over there sitting there chowing away.
Toby.
Mm. Trouble is my middle name, Toby?
Yeah, that's more like it.
Could be. And, of course, we have an... are you anonymous, or do you want to say who you are for the...
I'm anonymous.
He's anonymous. We have an anonymous listener. Actually, several anonymous listeners. And that was a bit of the chatter yesterday at the Huff meeting after the Tuesday 28th Freedom Sleepout. Again, there's likely to be one next week, the 26th of January, the 29th, such Freedom Sleepout. It'll also be the second city council meeting of the year, and it may be, although it's by no means assured, in fact, it's probably unlikely... Don Lane, our city council member and former mayor, will be coming up with a proposal to modify the camping ordinance, specifically to strike sleeping from the camping ordinance. You know, and it may seem a little ungracious for me to sort of sarcastically so describe Don Lane as Gone Lame, which I've always called him for 25 years, because of his general refusal to acknowledge, until recently, the obvious, which is that sleep is a human right, that it's a crime for city officials to tolerate, much less facilitate, the criminalization of homeless people at night, the seizure of their property, and so forth, which Lane has done throughout the 8 years of his, or 7 years of his tenure on city council. And not opposed with any vigor throughout his term as a so-called homeless activist for several decades. He's a politician, and politicians who compromise on this issue don't get any sympathy from me.
But in any case, he has come up with a proposal, supposedly, although he's meeting in closed meetings that don't include critics like myself, or any of the other freedom sleepers other than a few very select individuals like politicians Steve Plaich and Phil Posner, who are heads of two organizations that are part of the Freedom Sleepers Coalition. They head the Depot Project, or Homeless Depot, I think it's called, and the Steve is the Homeless Persons Legal Assistance Project, and I guess Phil was previously the Camp of Last Resort, which they kind of combined to call themselves the Homeless Depot Project. I hope I have that right. The other organizations, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which I'm with, and Food Not Bombs, which Keith McHenry and Abby Samuels and others donated a lot of time and energy from, and HAC, Toby Nixon's organization, Homeless Action and Advocacy Coalition, I hope I have that right, were not invited to these closed meetings. And it's, you know, it's an example of guidance from the elite and from the top. And if you want to suggest that guidance from the people who kept this criminalization in place, and I'm thinking of Don Lane mainly, because he's the person who's on the council, though Micah Posner is a part of this. His father is Phil Posner, and anyway, so they're meeting privately actually today and coming up with a proposal. I'm going to give a call to Steve Plaich, who often gives us a window into this closed room, but not access. Not necessarily that he could provide access, but he could speak up for it. He could insist on it. He could say that it's something that, that really needs to be done, and he does not. He prefers to be on the boards of these things. He prefers to be on the inside, whether it's the board of the American Civil Liberties Union or the board of the of NHCAN. And a lot of these are good organizations, and frankly, his participation, though I've been very critical of it in many points, has often made such organizations better. That, however, does not alter the fact that he's not doing what he should to get these things going in these organizations, to make them transparent and open, and also to include the main activists who are part of all this process. In any case, we should know by Sunday, or may know by Sunday, if Steve Plaich's account is accurate. And I may give a call to Phil Posner as well, who, in his own sturdy way, likes to proceed to... all these folks are principled in their own way. It's just elitists who are principled, I think almost as a function of their elite behavior, abandon some fundamental principle without even being aware of it. But in any case, we'll know perhaps, hopefully later, maybe even on this broadcast, what the actual proposal is for the... And it seems to be essentially striking the word sleeping from the camping ordinance. Not quite clear then how camping will be defined. I guess simply if you have camping gear with you, or if it's laid out, or if you announce you're going to stay the night. But the idea that sleeping itself will be a criminal indicator is something that they propose to strike. Now, the fact that Lane and Posner propose to strike it if they eventually do, and they've said they do sort of on Facebook pages and in private statements, but not in public statements to the Sentinel, for instance, or to the community, or at city council, that I'm aware of, or certainly not with any prominence or clarity or repetition, as far as I know. But if they do, they are going to be facing a reactionary majority. You would think that in this day and age, the right to sleep should be a non-issue, an obvious necessity, a matter of health and safety, common sense, whatever, you know. But the fact is, it's not. And the reason it's not is because it's a useful tool for the police department to interrogate and essentially remove from public view and from the public area and from the community people they don't want around. You thought, you know, this is you know, a situation where there was a Bill of Rights and everyone has some basic rights which police officers and certain classes of society cannot remove. Well, come on, let's be real. That's not the reality. It will never be the reality until the community or a part of the community demands it be the reality and forces the issue. And that's sort of what the Freedom Sleepers have been trying to do. Some people have been critics of this. If you go online to Santa Cruz Indie Media, you'll read Brent Adams, who's doing some work and some good work putting together a warming center, which in spite of, perhaps because of, that will be his argument, 3 years of toadying to the city council. And, you know, ass-licking is a little strong, because I think, let's say, restraining any criticism and leveling a lot of protest, I think actually with some futility in terms of trying to garner favor with those in power, leveling a lot of protest at the protesters, leveling a lot of hostility. We've seen Brent do some pretty angry, make some pretty angry statements against protesters as some sort of fundamental failure in the community, drawback, detriment to the community, the kind of stuff that you would hear, you know, Southern sheriffs say of civil rights activists when they came into the Southern communities, you know, just agitating and alienating and all that sort of thing. And there's certainly, those things are definitely a part of protest. You do agitate and you do alienate certain factions in the community. You essentially do what Martin Luther King, you know, the guy that everybody likes to parade around as the big hero, but doesn't really listen to what the man actually said and did in the end of his life, toward the end of his life, as he fought the greatest war machine on earth, now even greater a war machine, the United States government. You expose the tensions. You intensify the tensions in order to make them clear, in order to give people a chance to come out from hiding and to face the realities of the kind of police murder, for example, that's going on all over the country, and government murder that's going on all over the world, and low-grade Santa Cruz authority murder that happens when people die in jail, when people die outside of exposure or preventable illnesses and preventable conditions that they are not allowed, because they're not allowed to shelter themselves or use the vacant buildings that exist in Santa Cruz. You expose this in ways that are not pretty. And you don't do it because you're hoping you can get some crumbs from the government. Although, you know, I mean, it is said by those who get the crumbs, look, we have those crumbs. And that's true. Some people, those who get the crumbs may live a little longer, may survive longer, may get some benefit. The real question, though, is not whether you get a black president or a few black folks get positions of power and prestige, Condoleezza Rice, you know, the folks that get positions of power and prestige who have joined the ruling class, but whether the great majority of people's condition is significantly and permanently and substantially bettered. That is the real issue. And we know that none of that is happening. It's pretty clear. And so the true situation for homeless people has been, we'll see what happens with respect to the sleeping ban. Huff has been discussing the issue of what our position is regarding the proposed reforms by Don Lane and Micah Posner, once they get explicitly stated. And I know what my position sort of is. I mean, I know that I began this whole struggle many years ago in the 80s here with sort of the very kind of moderate position, far too moderate, I'm sure, that, you know, let's at least not arrest people sleeping in their vehicles or cite them without at least giving them a warning to move on. I mean, how's that for a half-assed, weak-kneed, bullshit position? And we brought that one to the city council, and they wouldn't even pass that. Instead, they said, oh, we'll give you a little card that gives you access to a shelter which had four beds for 1,000 to 1,500 homeless people outside. I mean, it was an obscene joke, and it still is. It really is. Of course, like a lot of politics across the globe is an obscene joke. And so what's my position, you know, now? Then my position became, well, at least recognize that the right to sleep is a basic right. You know, all right, arrest people for illegal camping, but not for sleeping. Let them sleep, for God's sake. Remove the sleeping ban sections from the camping ordinance, which is now what I understand Don Lane, former mayor, is proposing. And good for him. You know, I'm not going to criticize removing those sections from the ordinance. Although, then the issue then becomes, oh, so it's okay to sleep, but you can't cover up with a blanket. Or it's okay to sleep, but you can't put a tent over you if it's raining. Or it's okay to sleep in a tent, but if there are empty buildings all over town, it's illegal to go into one of those buildings that are being kept by rent profiteers and try to stay warm. You have to answer these questions, really, and they go more deep. You know, they strike into a different area, but they're important questions. So I'm going to play some cuts that I've acquired over the last, probably relatively recently. Here's an interview here's some stuff from the Red Church. And actually, as I look this over, I'm realizing that I have a lot of older interviews, which I do want to play, and I may play them in the show, but I think what I'm going to do now is play some more recent stuff. Here's an interview with a woman named Alexis who called in, and I've been a little concerned that no one was going to call. And if you're listening to this show, you can call in during the broadcast, and you might actually reach me, but you wouldn't reach me live on the air. We are in the process at Free Radio Santa Cruz of getting close to being in a studio. I don't know who won the $500, if anybody did. We may have been our own Free Radio people who did, in that which case we pay ourselves $500. We may not actually move into this place that we're considering, although I hope we do. I think we're meeting tomorrow to discuss it. But we don't have a studio now, and what we have instead is we prepare these broadcasts distantly, and I try to incorporate into the subsequent broadcasts your thoughts, your interviews, your information from the streets. So here's an example of the kind of interview I'm talking about.
Who are we on the line with? Sign in, caller.
Alexis.
And Alexis, you live at the Paige Smith Community House.
I do.
And you have some rather serious concerns about them?
Yes, I do.
And tell me about that.
Well, since I've been here, I've been assaulted. I filed a police report. Police came out that evening. This is October of 2 years ago already. I've been here almost two years. My time is coming up next month, which is fine. The lady still lives here that assaulted me. What other complaints do I have? And then, so I've moved out of that house and moved into a different house here on the premises. And since I've moved here, they have not done any type of maintenance on my room. And I've been wanting a screen on my window since day one, since I moved into this house. Now have a door that door lock does not work because somebody jammed something into it, so the key doesn't function. That happened a week ago, Saturday. next, it'll be a week as of tomorrow. I'm sick because I can't open my window. I've been in that room for about 2 months now. And I can't, I've been working up until, I don't know, just before I moved in here. I'm sorry, my timeline's not right. I've been unemployed. I've been sick because I can't open my window. I am allergic to insects and spiders. I've been in the hospital for 4 days for a spider bite once, and so I can't have my window open and it let insects crawl into my room. So I can't have any fresh air unless I open my bedroom window and open the front door.
So are you saying you want to be able to open your window, or you don't want to because of the spider danger?
I cannot open my window without a screen on it.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay.
And they know that.
So who's the person you've complained to and who's been ignoring your complaints?
Yeah, they say they filed a maintenance report, but yet the maintenance man is standing right there listening to all this, and they can't do anything about it, quote unquote, because they got some other room that they're dealing with right now. And that other room is empty, by the way. Mm-hmm. There's no renter in it.
And so
I haven't been able to pay my rent because I haven't been able to go file an employment because of my door. It's not secured. And I can't leave my window open because it won't be secured. There's no screen on it. I can't open it. I have allergies. I am now sick with an upper respiratory virus because of it. The serious stuff.
Are you getting much any support from other people, you know, in the building?
Oh, yes. I am on amoxicillin right now. I've been to the doctor.
And what kind of support? How about the other people who
live here?
Who live in the building? What are they saying?
Oh, yes. I have four other housemates.
And they're sympathetic?
Yes.
And who's in charge of this who really should be taking care of it but isn't?
Brian Lambs, program manager.
And what's his name again?
Brian, with an I, Lambs as in sheep, with an S at the end.
I got you. And what does he say when you approach him with these issues?
He says, well, I'm sorry that he's very nonchalant. He's very nonchalant, which really upsets me. Well, I'm sorry, Alexis, that you can't breathe or you can't open your window. And I'm sorry that you can't leave your room right now. I go, well, if I could, I could file unemployment and I can catch up on my rent. If I could leave my room, I could. And today I vented very loudly, by the way. I had to. I just had to get it out. I couldn't take it any longer. I've been in my room for a week, and I can't leave it. And I had to have a housemate sit out here in the kitchen and watch my room so I could go out and check my mail, and I could go out and talk to Brian about this stuff. Gina Matthews, who now works here, overheard the conversation. Who else? Lots of people overheard the conversation. Even Matthew, who is our maintenance man, I don't know his last name, overheard the conversation. So they're very nonchalant about it because I guess I haven't caught up on my rent. So they're using that as an excuse to not work with me. And I'm willing to pay whatever damages are done to my door or window, although I didn't do anything to my window. I moved into a non-screen window. I did have to take a hammer to my door, finally, after 5 hours of not being able to get into my bedroom, and I had to get into my bedroom that way so I could take my medications.
Right.
I'm on a seizure medication. I'm on anti-inflammatory for my neck and brain and back injuries that I had in 2013 when I was here, while I was here. Since I've been here, in and out, I've been here. I've gone to college. I took the ACE program. I was employed at Dollar Tree for over a year while I'm here, while I was here. I've done many things while I've been here for myself to get myself out of here and on to life, and they're holding me back. I feel like they're holding me back.
Well, what do you think is their motivation?
I don't know, sir.
Hmm. What do other folks in the building say about this?
I don't know. I haven't really sat down to talk to any one person other than that they are supporting me.
Are there others who have similar problems, or are you the only one who is in this situation?
No, there have been similar problems. There's been other assaults. There's been other... in my old house. I've been bullied. You can talk to Officer McDonald, who knows me, and I'm about to call her after my interview with you.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I want to touch base with her again. She actually took the police report that happened when I was assaulted.
Who assaulted you?
So...
Who assaulted?
Those are my complaints.
Who assaulted you?
Mara. Her name's Mara. M-A-U-R-A. And I don't have her last name.
Huh. Wow.
There's only one Mara here.
So, are you eager to stay on? Are you...
No, I'd rather move on like I want to.
So what is it you're looking to get before you move on, if anything, aside from letting us all know what's going on?
My rights.
And
I have any rights, any more tenant rights.
Have you contacted any tenant organizations?
Not yet.
You might want to do
can
that.
Can you refer me to some?
Insofar as there are people interested, I don't know how effective they are.
Okay.
If you call me back in an hour, sorry about this hour thing.
No worries.
I may be able to find out something. Right now I'm... don't have the information at my fingertips. But, yeah, there is a group called Tenants Together. I think the main thing is to file a written complaint. If you have a complaint with Brian Lambs, file a written complaint with him, keep a copy of it, and then send that copy to, I don't know, whether it's the Department of Health or something.
What is it called, sir?
Well, that's a good question. See, I don't want to give you misinformation here, but it's...
Okay, well, I'll call you back in an hour.
Okay, why don't you do that, and I'll see what I can drum up.
Okay.
And again, mainly, the main issue is do a lot of this in writing with the people involved. Have you ever done that already? You got that paper record?
Yes, because I'm a paralegal by trade.
Oh, well, then you should be, you know, are you the only one who is in this situation? Done that already? You got that paper record?
Yes, because I'm a paralegal by trade.
Oh, well, then you should be, you know, you should be all set. Or maybe, you know. I mean,
they know that, too.
Well, call me back.
I will.
And we've been talking with?
Alexis.
Thanks, Alexis.
I appreciate your time, sir.
Hey, I appreciate it.
So on the line with me is Louise Drummond, who is a freedom sleeper, who is going to court on January 26th, next Tuesday, or I should say, yeah, that's when her trial is for being in the park after dark. Is that right, Louise?
That's right.
After 10 o'clock, right, you are, yeah. I have similar charges that will be coming up later for me. What made you decide to be such a criminal at City Hall?
Well, because I thought it was totally unjust that the law is that, or was, that people couldn't sleep. People without a home could not sleep anywhere in public.
And have you noticed any change in police policies, or do you think that your work and that of the other freedom sleepers has had any impact?
I feel as though it has. For one thing, they're allowing people to sleep in front of the city hall now without harassment.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true. They've removed the Klieg lights, and they're allowing people to park again, and they reduced the number of security guards from 4, this is what I heard from Toby Nixon, down to 1 a day before yesterday. So that seems to be an improvement.
Right. And they're not coming and rousing people out.
Well, I know that that's true in front of, on the sidewalk. Of course, for those who have the temerity to try to go under the eaves of the building or to go next door under the eaves of the Civic Auditorium at night, even though there's nobody there, they apparently do get rousted.
Right. That's unjust. That has to change.
Well, I understand that Phil and others are working with Micah Posner and Don Lane around issues of at least introducing a measure which may or may not pass, which would strike the word sleeping from the camping ordinance?
Yes.
And I understand that...
And it would allow people to have a blanket also.
Really? So do you know where this currently lies? I heard that there was a meeting today of these folks, and they were going to kind of come up with a finalized version in some way.
It did take place, but Philip didn't tell me exactly what was said.
Okay. So I know that this is... something that you've been involved in, although it's only more recently that those of us who started out together kind of dropped off, and they're sort of, myself included, and there are some sort of really diehard folks maintaining their vigil there at City Hall every Tuesday night. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I am totally for it as a gesture of unity.
I agree. Do you have any sense, have you spoken to any city council members or perhaps to the new mayor, Cynthia Matthews, regarding her opinion of changes in the camping ordinance or other policy changes that might decriminalize the and make homeless people feel less frightened of being in public?
No, I haven't spoken to anyone else. Knowing Cynthia, I'm sure she's still all for punitive measures.
Have you actually had conversations with any of these council members in the past?
No.
And what, you got something against these council members? You don't want to cozy up to them, invite them to dinner?
Oh, well, I would. I'll invite you at the same time.
That would be fun. Well, I guess I'm hoping if you might ask Phil if he shows up to give a call back. If he gets back, particularly before 5 or 5:15, I may still be preparing this particular version of the show, and we can, you know, put him on and whoop it up. Otherwise, maybe we can get some more information for Sunday, and we can talk and put him on the air on that day.
Right, for sure.
And, you know, let me know how things go we should say there is Phil is going to court tomorrow himself at 1:30 on Friday. That would be the 22nd, right?
That's right.
And that's going to be in Department 1, is that correct?
Yes.
Because I know originally that was for Judge Burdick, but I think Judge Burdick passed on to another court, and you may now have... Paul Maraganda, who I am not the biggest fan of, even though he's the senior judge of the court. How is Phil feeling about his upcoming case?
Well, I'm sure he thinks he's going to lose it because he's going to say it's an unjust law, and they're going to say that's not for this court to decide.
I mean, I know Phil at one point said, and indeed was very militant about even considering going to jail at the time of the police telling people to move off the grass onto the sidewalk, and they can't be at City Hall, and they can't sleep at night there, at yada, yada, yada. And, you know, we kind of decided, I think, instead to reassemble at the main post office where we started that protest in July. And I'm sorry, you were saying, please?
No, I was just affirming what you were saying.
Yeah, and I think what Phil did say subsequently when conversations we had, and I don't know what his current position is, was that he was considering saying to the judge, I'm not interested in paying a fine or doing, well, what I would call community slavery, but they call community service, simply, you know, to, you know, bow and scrape before the great majesty of the law, which in its great majesty says both the rich and the poor have the right to, are forbidden from begging in the streets, sleeping under bridges, and stealing bread. That famous quote. So, but what's his position now? Does he feel, how does he feel about, you know, the prospect of jail? I mean, you can't get a judge to put you in jail unless they choose to. I mean, you can ask to have your, you know, your time converted to jail, but that's a, that's quite a step to take. Phil's in his 70s, right?
Right. Well, I was there being charged at the same time that Phil was last time. And I asked the judge if there were any chance at all that we would go to jail. He said no. So I'm not sure that Phil's going to be able to be a sacrificial lamb in the way that you described.
Nor am I suggesting he do so. I know that some judges and commissioners, when they're confronted with an individual who says, I will not do community service, I will not take probation, I will not pay a fine, I'm not interested in any of that. If you want, you can convert my time to jail. I'll be happy to go to jail. They can, although you would think that this would be unconstitutional because infractions deny you a jury trial and deny you a public defender. That's the lowest level of crime that all of us are charged with, infractions rather than misdemeanors or felonies. So you would think that they, you know, and by not providing us with those guarantees, they also are supposed to not have us risk jail. But still, some judges will allow that. I guess my question is, as far as you know, is Phil contemplating anything of that kind, or do you have any sense of that?
He has not mentioned that to me, and I'm sure he would.
Well, that means that this is I guess is it 10 o'clock tomorrow morning that Phil's going to be facing the music?
1:30 tomorrow afternoon.
1:30, thank you. Yeah, I right you are. I recall that now. And that's going to be in Department 1 down at 701 Ocean Street, I guess.
That's right.
Well, I may be seeing you there, and I hope other people join you in solidarity. Do you know, is Food Not Bombs going to be serving food out front?
I don't think so. Abby and Keith are going to be out of town.
So they, yeah, so it probably will be not be happening. I know they are going to court next week on more serious charges of trying to restore spaces for musicians downtown.
Right. I was so surprised that that was a felony.
Yeah, well, it was initially a conspiracy to vandalize, which is to say to restore the sacred blue dots or blue brackets on the sidewalk that define the only legal places where you can exercise your First Amendment rights with a display device or a table. And then when those were removed by the city with no warning, no public hearing, and they were then restored by Keith, according to his own account, and he apparently made no secret about it, then, you know, they charged him with initially a felony and dragged him away in handcuffs from the Freedom Sleepers where he was doing some feeding people there. And then later dropped the felony charge, turned it into a misdemeanor, but still, you know, a year in jail, $1,000 fine, possible maximum. So,
yeah, it's really severe punishment for painting stripes on the sidewalk.
Yeah, particularly when you're trying to restore the basic rights of street performers, of vendors, people who you would think the sidewalk was made for, as well as the rest of us, you know.
Yes. Well, the city council doesn't agree, and I don't actually blame the police. They're doing what the city council has asked them to do.
Well, perhaps. I don't think that the police have to show up at 10 o'clock at night in the middle of a Freedom Sleeper protest and drag Keith and Abby away in handcuffs. I don't think so. I find that...
Yeah, well, I think that's unnecessary, too.
I think it's a political move. I think it's designed to, you know, discredit them, criminalize them, terrify them, and also frighten people around them. And I think that that's bad.
Exactly.
So, 1:30 tomorrow, Phil Posner will go to trial for violating 13.04.011C, I think the code section is, being in a park or in a closed area after closing hours, to a city hall at night, peacefully with a protest sign. And is that a proper understanding of that?
That's true. Well, I don't think the protest sign had anything to do with that. The infraction was just for being in what they call a park.
Right, but the fact is, it didn't matter that he had a protest sign. He didn't have the right to protest, according to their construction of the Constitution, right?
Yes, well, that construction is going on all over the states. I've noticed that peaceful protesters are being penalized.
It's true, although I don't think most jurisdictions make it illegal to be at City Hall at night peacefully with a protest sign. This is unique to the Santa Cruz City and County area, or if not unique, it seems to be not something that's broadly done across the state that I've heard about. But I think you're right. I think there is a crackdown on political protesters. And, if Bernie Sanders has people arrested from his office, as he did in 1999, I guess, if our wonderful Bernie can do it, then I guess I think anybody can do it. I thought I'd just throw that in to make another point. You don't have to be a right-wing Republican. You just have to be essentially a political person with a power base that's being challenged to want to essentially stop protest. That's been my feeling.
Yes.
So, 1:30 tomorrow, I guess, hope to see you there. I guess I will see you there if I show up. And if I don't show up, I will be looking for a report on what's coming. Any last thoughts, Louise? We're talking with Louise Drummond here at downtown Santa Cruz, kind of.
Yeah, let's keep up the pressure on the city government, because eventually it'll work.
You are such an optimist, but you may well be right.
Mm-hmm.
Hey.
Well, there seems to have been movement.
Well, it is true that we did persuade Don Lane, at least, that he could not really, with a straight face, continue to maintain that sleep is a crime. Is a viable position for him. The fact that he was able to maintain it for 25 years and not explain why to me, and also not reverse his position substantially. In other words, he said sleep is, he's agreed, he wants to eliminate the word sleep from the sleeping ordinance, from the camping ordinance. But he does not want to, or he hasn't said he wants to, eliminate all the laws that he has voted for that otherwise criminalize homeless people from being in a park after dark, from parking their vehicle, from having an RV that takes up more than one space, even if they're willing to pay for it, to be on the beach at night, and certain beaches like Cowell Beach. There's a whole raft of laws that Lane has voted for as recently as a week ago Tuesday that he continues to at least not oppose. Well, he supports them. He voted for them. He voted for it last Tuesday. He voted for the RV law on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
You know,
yes,
I'm,
I know.
Forgive my...
Well, we have to keep the pressure up, because with climate change and the coming climate catastrophe, there are going to be more and more people who are out. Syria, the refugees from Syria, that situation is going to be repeated in the United States.
Yeah, we have the refugees from rents in Santa Cruz. I mean, come on. Or jails in Santa Cruz. I mean, it's going on, and it's going to continue. And I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, Louise. Any final thoughts?
Good luck with your health.
And good luck with you and Phil, and with Phil tomorrow, with you on Tuesday.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. And that was Louise Drummond, and hope you get down to her trial tomorrow. I should say Phil's trial. Phil's her husband, of course. And that'll be in Department 1 at the Santa Cruz County Courthouse. But on the line with me now, boy, the calls are kind of stacking up here. I have a man we haven't heard from for a number of years. That's Miguel Balderos, also known as Mad Mike the Wonder Dog. Hello, Mad Mike.
Hey, what's up? Long live the revolution.
Well, what revolution? But
it's going to happen, though. Eventually it's going to happen. Don't worry about it. It's inevitable.
You're the man.
And fuck the police. Fuck Jared Maragana. Fuck all the... Fuck Mike Rockin. Fuck the city council. Fuck all those pseudo-progressive liberal Nazi assholes. They banished me from fucking Santa Cruz. I'm exiled. I'm down here in Santa Maria, California, near Santa Barbara. But I'm going to have the last laugh.
So what do you mean, Mike, what do you mean you're banished? In what way are you banished?
I have to stay 2 counties away from Santa Cruz, and if I come back to Santa Cruz, then I'm subject to arrest right there on the spot.
So how long is this for?
Maybe anywhere from 13 months to 3 years.
And what crime were you sent away for? Remind the listeners.
I set the city attorney's office on fire. It just scorched the damn door. It didn't really do any damn damage, but it claimed it's $50,000 of damage. And they're doing insurance fraud because the insurance company already paid for it. And now they got me paying for $13,000 in restitution. And the damn damage, they couldn't have came up to no more than a grand or two. That's about it.
Now, was this a...
The door just needed to be repainted or something.
Was this a sinister, calculated attempt, or were you in some kind of a drunken stupor? What?
I was in an alcoholic fugue. I was just drunk off my ass and just... I know it's cameras all over City Hall, and it's... I know Barrisoni, they got cameras and all that. I was so blitz drunk that I didn't even know what the fuck I was doing. And but I guess subconsciously I did. Unconsciously, subconsciously, or whatever. Remember, I was on your station the same night that happened with me and my little monkey when he was 9 years old, my son Jonah. And then I guess some subliminal messages. Maybe you did use some neuro-linguistic programming on me and made me go over there and set the city attorney's office on fire.
I didn't do it.
Anyway, it was a good thing, though, because I wasn't arrested. I was rescued because I had a fast-acting form of prostate cancer I didn't even know about until I got arrested. And it would have killed me. The same thing that killed Frank Zappa and Bill Bixby. It was like one second is not there. I mean, one day is not there. The next week or two, it's growing and faster and metastasizing. And it would have killed me within a year or two. And they took my prostate out.
So, where were you held during the? This was in 2010. You were arrested and convicted, right?
Yes, I stayed in county Santa Cruz County Jail for a year, almost a year to the day, and then they transferred me to San Quentin to the reception, the oldest prison in California, San Quentin. And then I got sent to a little place in Vacaville, Solano, CSP, California State Prison, Solano. And I stayed there from August 4th, 2011 until they booted me out January 9th. So I got out 18 months early. They were good behavior and, I posed no threat. They see me as no danger. I'm sick as a dog. I probably have colon rectal cancer. I had prostate cancer. I got stage 2 kidney disease. I got my thyroid out. I'm walking with a cane. I got emphysema, COPD, asthma. I'm fucking 3/4 dead. So I'm totally harmless, but you gotta remember a wounded animal is the most dangerous kind. Ain't that right?
Well, you still seem pretty perky, Mike.
Yeah, I'm still feisty, but I'm still gonna be me. I mean, I'm not breaking any laws or anything like that. I'm gonna obey all laws, rules, and regulations. I don't even jaywalk when I'm sober. I'm clean and sober now for 5 years, 5.5 years. And other than weed, I smoke weed, of course. That's medicine. Proposition 215 is good medicine.
Now, were you allowed to smoke or use cannabis products in jail?
No, but they knew. They had me under investigation as an anarchist arsonist. They photocopied all my mail letters, and they had me under constant investigation. One time they threw me in the hole for like 2 weeks because I was writing to a bunch of anarchists telling them we need to kill the police like they've been killing us because they... And set car bombs off and then have 2 car bombs go off at their funeral so we can get the rest of the bastards. And they intercepted that shit and threw me in a hole. so much for freedom of speech. I didn't say go do it. I just said we should, or maybe if somebody should be done, because they're going out there murdering fucking people. Like they got a license to kill. They're just not but a bunch of punks with fucking badges and a gun. You know, they're gangbangers. You know, so they're out there killing blacks, unarmed people, kids, even kids. Some of your rights, and they're getting away with it. You're getting away with murder. And had I come back to Santa Cruz, they probably would have had me suicide by cop like they did poor John Dine and shot him down like a dog right on Front Street. May he rest in peace. But, you know, karma is a motherfucker. Butchie Baker was an instrument in fucking getting Boxer Billy killed, died of hypothermia back in the 90s. What was it, 98, 97? Well, anyway, see what happened to him. He got his fucking brains, his noodles blown all out his fucking head. The karma is a motherfucker. What goes around comes around. You're going to be a straight-up dick asshole, scumbag, Nazi fucking punk that's going to come back and bite you in the ass sooner or later.
So, Mike, you in jail, you're African-American yourself.
Choctaw, Cherokee, Indian, Mexican, African-American, German, and Irish.
And which predominates?
Predominates? Good question. I guess Indian. I got three different types of Indian. Mexican is Indian and Spanish, so I'm predominantly Indian, but I go as black, though.
Now, were you actually raised on a reservation of some kind?
No, I have family on reservations, though. Uh-huh. And my grandmother was full-blooded Indian.
Now, when you were in jail, what was the response of prisoners to the increasing publicity around the Ferguson shooting, the Eric Garner shooting,
They didn't give a rat's ass about shit. They was fucking too busy watching Jerry Springer playing dominoes and cards and all that. They don't give a fuck about nothing about what they're going to eat and what they're going to smoke and consume. A bunch of brain dead idiots, especially the fucking black. Sympathetic, they're an endangered species. They don't realize they're fucking next. You know, they're getting all these other people now, but when they get their ass out, they're going to be next. That's just the people in their community are going to blow their feckless ass away anyway. That's a bunch of them, a bunch of scumbags anyway.
What kind of restrictions do you have on yourself other than, you know, having to stay two counties away from... Is that actually what it says, stay two counties away from Santa Cruz?
Well, I have multiple strikes. I got two strikes. If I get another one, if I so much as sneeze or some cop plants some dope on me, I can get 25 years of life under three strikes, you're outlaw. Also, if I get caught with a weapon or ammunition, I got trigger lock on me, I have to get 15 years of life for that, so I can't have a gun. So they can just plant a gun on me if they want to, you know. I'm not giving them ideas. I'm sure they're thinking about this. I'm sure the badge number 193, F Evil List, when he had my cap staked out waiting for me to show my silly ass up there, so they can blow me away off the beaten path so nobody can see it. And but I turned myself in. I beat his ass. Just beat him to the punch by turning myself in and fucked up his golden opportunities to eliminate my ass and murder me in cold blood. And it's a good thing, probably, that I don't come back to Santa Cruz for a while. At least not while I'm on parole. I can't even have a knife. I'm cutting my food up with a fucking credit card, you know, with a plastic card. They don't even want me to have a knife. I can't have any weapons, bows, pepper spray, can't wear a bulletproof vest, can't, none of that shit. I can't have shit, not even a Swiss Army knife.
Now, you mentioned that you're able to get a number of operations in jail. We've heard in Santa Cruz and in other jails, particularly in the northern part of California, how essentially shitty the medical service is. And how, in fact, it's so shitty that, you know, they went into federal receivership. They've been in federal receivership for at least a decade, you know. But you found... In the jails you were in, is it fair to say you got decent medical treatment?
Not really. It was substandard, but at least it was better than when the fascist police state of California had control of it. The Fed stepped in and they forced them to do better, much better, and it was getting people colonoscopy and so like that. But now that the Fed's turned back over control back to the fascist police state, and they're back to their old goddamn set, same old fucking tricks and games. They try to save fucking 50 cents and end up spending thousands of dollars or millions of dollars in lawsuits trying to save 50 cents. And they deny people with terminal cancer and kidney hepatitis C who needs interferon treatment, so something like some ridiculous price like $187 a pill. The pharmaceutical companies are raking like they're real bandits. And but they're stopping people from getting life saving treatments, but they're giving these motherfuckers titties and turning them to men into women they have to do because they have to be politically correct. They'll spend $200,000 to $300,000 on giving some inmates some titties and sex realignment change, but they won't give somebody a few thousand dollars interferon treatment to save his liver and keep let him live a few more years.
If you were to describe anything positive that happened to you in jail, would there be anything that you would mention?
Oh, yeah. Other than them saving my life, basically, by taking my prostate out, my cancerous prostate. I've been going to school, college. I've just had 6 more credits to get an AA degree. I'm going for my bachelor's here in Allen Hancock College down here, one of the 5th best colleges in the nation. And I'm getting ready to do that. And but that had that. Every single waking moment I was in prison, I wasn't watching TV, Jerry Springer, Cards, Dominoes, shit like that. I was hitting the books, getting everything knocked out, doing correspondence college courses and studying algebra, and I'm majoring in clinical psychology. I'm going to be hopefully one day a clinical psychologist, or at least a therapist, where I'll be able to, once I get my master's degree.
Is there much discrimination in jail regarding different categories, whether it's race, religion, sexual orientation?
It's still that going on. A lot of that, it's never going to change. They divide and conquer. They segregate. They basically let us segregate ourselves. It's against the law for them to put whites over here, blacks over here, and Mexicans over here, but that's what happens. You got a white section where the TV's at, where the part of the day room is white section only. You got the black section only. Then you got the Hispanic section only. You can't go sit down on their table, their chairs, or their benches and watch TV, and vice versa. You know, me, I just did what the fuck I want, so I always buck the system, and I was getting death threats and shit. I'm a Muslim, but Muslims don't even like me because I tell the motherfuckers like it is. I'm a realist more than anything else. I tell them they're all full of shit. Most of the motherfuckers are pro-ISIS anyway. And they go to Juma and been praying instead of talking about ISIS and things that really matter. They're talking about you going to hell if you look at a woman with lust in your eyes and all that shit. You go against your own body, your natural instincts to look at a nice, beautiful woman, and then you're going to go to hell for that. But they ain't talking about ISIS raping babies and killing people and crucifying them and chopping their fucking heads off. But they're not real Muslims. Real Muslims don't do that shit. They think the infidels and the apostates and the Jews and everybody else is giving Islam a bad name. It's the overzealous religious fuckhead nut job motherfuckers. And this is what they should do. They should let them get their goddamn Islamic State and get them all in one spot and nuke their ass back to the fucking 7th century like they want to get there, or the Stone Age. That's what I would do with the motherfuckers.
You are a Donald Trump fan, perhaps?
No, fuck Donald Trump. That fucking clown. Fuck all of them. None of the above. I would vote for Mickey Mouse before I vote for any of these cocksuckers, including Hillary Clinton. Bernie Sanders, okay, she's a socialist. I'm so far to the goddamn left, the Communist Party kicked me out, the fucking Communist Party. I guess I'm an anarchist. I want to overthrow this whole motherfucker, you know, before the Chinese come over and take over. If anybody's going to take over this country, it's going to be us. And that means my fellow anarchist people, vive anarchie, you know, coup d'etat, give me a bomb, a Molotov. But anyway.
Now, you were in jail before. You were in prison before. Did it change much from your previous experience?
Well, back in the old days, you know, you used to have to carry a shank around with you and wear National Geographic as body armor taped to your body so you wouldn't get shanked. There's still some of that going on in the higher levels. California Department of Corrections broke the whole thing down to 5 levels. Before, they used to have people with life without murderers and all that mixed in with people with fucking DUIs and drug charges. And some of these motherfuckers ain't got nothing to lose. They need to dust off old Sparky and give them a lot of these bastards a lap, let them give old Sparky a lap dance. You know, cause a lot of them are scumbag motherfucking maggots who ain't gonna repent. They're cold-blooded fucking killers. And as soon as they get out, they're either gonna kill somebody or get killed. That's what's gonna happen. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is that now they got them kind of segregated at different levels. Like level 1 is like honor cap type stuff with minimum security. They can go outside the gate, the prison. Level 2 is where I was. That's kind of general population. They got murderers, killers, and people like that, but you ain't got the hardcore motherfuckers. And people, you have this based on the point system from zero to like 100 and something. It depends on the depends on what level you are. It determines what level you are by how many points you have.
So, how much of your life now have you spent in behind bars?
All together.
Yep.
I would say I'm getting pretty close to 15, almost 20 years. I finally grew up though. After I turned 55 and I had this fucking cancer that was eating my ass away, and the doctor just said it like just so nonchalantly, like you got a booger on your nose, or you got a hangnails, you know. And that woke me up that I grew up, you know. I realized, you know, it says meaning of insanity is keep doing the same old shit and expecting different results. I realized that I was my own worst enemy, and the alcohol was not only killing me, but it was turning me to the thing that should not be, you know. I was sick. I was evil when I'm drunk. I'm one of those evil drunks. But I'm normally mellow and cool, but when people fuck with me or I get pissed off, then I go off the deep end and go postal on their ass. So I had to, you know, you had to learn how to pick and choose your own battles. You had to just, you know, be a tiger every fucking day. Sometimes you had to be a little mouse and stay quiet and play dead. Operation Foss and Pussy in full effect. I'm just playing dead right now. And, and get well. That's what I'm trying to do, get well. And see my little 16-year-old son now. He's 16 and a half. My big monkey, he's bigger than me, 209 pounds. Almost as tall as me, I think he can kick my ass. For sure he can kick my ass, my 16-year-old son. So I'm just trying to be a dad and go to school and get healthy and stop smoking, doing hard drugs and no alcohol and all that shit. But I'm still going to smoke weed until I die. Well, at least I can eat it, though. I shouldn't be smoking it. But other than that, I'm not doing anything. Revolution jump off, and then everything is lock and load time, you know, what the fuck?
Now,
you got to.
What city are you in now?
I'm in Santa Maria. This is between San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara.
Have you had any connection? I know up in Santa Cruz you had a lot of connection with the homeless movement here. Any connection with them in Santa Maria?
No, I haven't. I've seen them. There's a lot of homeless people here, and they kind of fuck with the homeless here too, but there's a vast sympathetic public who's telling basically the police to back the fuck off the homeless, leave them alone. And the police want to harass them and fuck with them, but basically if you're homeless, you're not fucking with nobody. There's one dude right now, he's over by the CVS, and he's been panhandling all day with a sign standing up there by the parking lot right before they come out the parking lot and turn on Broadway. He's been standing there all day. I don't know how much he's making or anything, but he must be obviously making something because he's there every damn day. And they're not fucking with him. And this man, Santa Cruz, they would have jacked his ass up and told him to leave straight away. He's homeless and all that shit. They'd have told him, especially Butchie Baker and Evil Lit, they would have told him to take a fucking hike straight away or get the fuck out of town or something like that, you know. But here they're being cool. But it's kind of cool. But I really don't know because I'm not homeless here yet. But I'm probably going to be homeless after I get out of this program. I'm going to the program, and I was thinking about just laying low, go to college, go spring, this spring semester, and then in the summer, I can be houseless, or again, maybe get a little motorhome, or if I get enough money, buy a few acres and get put a trailer on it, and grow some organic veggies and some ding, hello, some legal stuff. But hopefully, weed's going to be legal this year, I think. Maybe if they get it on the ballot. What do you think?
I don't know. It may be legal for some commercial folks. I don't know.
If they can't make it legal for everybody, then we're going to riot. We're going to burn and loot and all that. They ain't going to just make it for the fucking capitalist pigs. They got to make it legal for everybody. Fuck the pharmaceutical companies, Budweiser, and the rest of the alcohol industry and the tobacco industry. They're salivating right now because they know there's billions of dollars in profit here. And they're going to try to do everything they can. I'm sure they got the lobbyists. That's on their knees in the Senate chambers sucking cock to get them to make it so they break in on the bus. It ain't gonna happen like that, you know. It's gonna be legal for everybody, or it's gonna be legal for nobody. It's gonna be just like it is now, or legal for everybody.
So, Mike, you spent a lot of time in Santa Cruz. How many years would you say you were here?
I've been in Santa Cruz since 1987. In and out. I keep coming, you know, other than the state paid vacations, I think, did. An old Romanian gypsy once told me in Lugano, Switzerland, where I was doing time in prison in Switzerland with him, this is a prison life good for gypsy. I've been redeemed actually in prison. I know a lot of people who are not so lucky, especially a lot of homeless people that are long dead for a whole panoply of reasons, from kidney disease to drinking yourself to death to HIV. I've shot up dope with people who had full-blown AIDS 20, 30 years ago, and I'm still alive, and they're all dead. But it's a good thing that I have been in and out. I hate to admit it. You know, sometimes the cure is worse than the disease, but prison kind of redeemed me in a way. I've been able to get my GED, go to college, did some vocational training under my belt, computers and different things. And that's what I do. But you can prison can be a fucking hell, too. You're watching the clock, looking at the calendar, and watching TV, wasting your fucking life away, and come in as a dummy, stay as a dummy, and get out as a fucking dummy. Fuck all that shit, you know. I was applying myself. I was going to turn this goddamn bitter fucking lemons into lemonade and sell it like a capitalist pig and make money.
So, Mike, you know, would you like to do any shout-outs to people in Santa Cruz, since some of them, I doubt many, because I've got a small audience, but anybody who might be listening to you who knows you, do you want to say anything to any of them?
Oh, yeah, Marco. Marco, if he's still out there, he sent me $400. He was one of the few people who helped me out when I was in lockdown and in prison. Some people, you even sent me some snaps. But very few rare people. Jim Costner helped me out with some snaps. He bought me a scientific calculator that I needed for algebra. There's a few people, but most of the people, especially the homeless, didn't give a fuck whether I lived or died. They wouldn't have pissed down my throat or let me lick the sweat off their musty nuts if I was dying of thirst in the desert, you know? I was a non-entity, out of sight, out of mind. They didn't give a fuck whether I would have came out better if I'd have poured gasoline myself and set my own ass on fire. That's what all this shit done for me. It made my kid be without his father for another 5.5 years. I've been out of my kid's life so many damn times. I'm like a stranger to him. When I came back after being in prison in Miami, he was calling some other motherfucker's daddy. He didn't even realize I was his daddy. You know, this is fucked up. I'm going to be a dad now. That's what I got on a grandpa. Now I got a little 3-year-old granddaughter in Chicago. I'm going to try to get her and then bring her out here and get a farm and get a knucklehead daddy out here too and be with my family and my kids, because pretty soon the whole shit's going to hit the fan. This shit can't keep going on. I'm not saying Armageddon or something like that, but everything from now on, it's only going to get worse and worse and worse until revolution happens. So that's what's going
to
happen.
Anything else to anybody in Santa Cruz you want to speak out to?
Let me see. All my West Side buddies, I hope they're still alive. Hey, give me a call. If you out there, fuck anybody out there who hears you, give me a call, 805-332-0720.
Say it again.
805-332-0720.
In case you didn't hear, Mike, before we end the call, I'll ask you to say it a third time, so go get a pencil or a pen or, you know, click it into your phone or whatever. Any other thoughts, Mike, before I roll on?
These motherfuckers, sleep is not a fucking crime. It's a scientific fact that sleep deprivation will kill you faster than smoking 20 packs of cigarettes a day and trying to run a marathon. The people are getting stressed out. The stress and your cortisol, it's only body chemistry. But sleep not only fucks you up psychologically and make you a goddamn fucking zombie, but it kills you literally, give you stroke, heart attack, kidney disease, you name it. They're killing people by these cock fucking sucking maggots, and God does not like ugly. They can sleep. How can they fucking sleep at night in their fucking sleep number bed? And then get up in the morning and go back to work and just go on a seek and destroy mission to fuck with people who ain't got a place to lay their goddamn head. They have nowhere to sleep. They're gonna roast. There's a special place in hell for these cockbites. You know it. See, they're just like, they know their days are numbered. They can't change. Most of them are fucking got shipper brain. Most of them should be on psych meds their goddamn self. You know, they think I'm crazy. They're the motherfuckers crazy. And when revolution jumps off, we're not going to put their ass in prison. We're going to fucking hang them up on the nearest light post with fucking number E-string piano wire around their fucking neck. Or the rest of them going to be put in the same position they've been putting people all their life, acting under the color of law to oppress people exploit them, fuck them over, and literally murder them.
So, Mike, give your number one more time before I move on, and good luck, man.
All right. 805-332-0720. This is a new follow-up. When I came in, they didn't have all these gadgets and all this bullshit. You know, this was just like a jitterbug flip phones I had. Now that this damn thing does so many things, it probably can go to Mars by itself. Anyway, 805-332-0720. You can call me 24 hours a day, anytime. I don't give a fuck. Wake me up. Especially if you talk about revolution and we're going to do something.
Hey,
you know,
Mike.
We're going to do direct action one way or the other, because you can still do shit. If you can be an armchair revolutionary or a coffee shop anarchist, but you can still, in this day and age, you don't have to leave your motherfucking, your mom's basement, and you can create a whole bunch of havoc in hell and raise hell and cover your own fucking lazy boy.
Thanks, Mike, and you take care, man.
All right, you too, mate.
Stay out, stay as well as you can.
All right, I'll try. I'm a cyborg Terminator X. It's hard to kill me. You know, I'll be here when the last cockroach is crawling in my hand and I'm about to eat his fucking ass.
Take care, man. Okay, well, we are on the line with activist and Homeless Legal Assistance Project hombre Steve Plaich, who is, if he's not running around buttering bagels, he's buttering up members of the, who knows, sort of ruling class in Santa Cruz. So what's with the ruling class today? This is Thursday, and I guess, you know, tomorrow Phil Posner has his court trial at 1:30. Will you be there?
I'm going to try to make it by. I have a couple of things I need to do. Of course, you know that our ACLU, your favorite group, awards banquet is on Sunday, so I have to go pick up the plaques, and it's supposed to be pouring rain. So I would like to go and support Phil. It sounds like it'll be an interesting hearing, to say the least.
So I remember the ACLU has a number of awards coming up on Sunday. Tell us where and when that's happening. Is it open to the public? And
yeah.
Have you?
Yes, it is. It's open to the public, of course. St. Michael's on Main, which is on South Main Street in SoCal. I think everybody kind of knows where Michael's is. And it'll be 2:00. I usually last for an hour and a half, couple hours. Just a nice mixer, some finger food, and a glass of wine or something. We're giving the Hammer of Justice Award to Willow Katz for her work with prisoners' rights, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we're giving the Lifetime Achievement Award, Paul Johnson Lifetime Achievement Award. If you know, Paul Johnson was one of the founders, as my understanding, of Wilf, and a longtime Santa Cruz activist. You probably know more about him than I.
And you'll probably be giving the Pie and the Pusser Award to Mike Rotkin, perhaps?
Now, Mike Rotkin is getting a Lifetime Achievement Award based on the fact that he just stepped off of the board. We want to acknowledge, you know, for better or for worse, the fact that he's made a contribution to civil liberties, in Santa Cruz. People can argue about his views on social justice, particularly.
Oh, don't make me laugh, please.
But nevertheless, it's an honor we think is appropriate.
Right. So that's all coming up on Sunday. Today, as I understand it, there were two things happening. One is you are going to be, Father Joel of the Calvary Episcopal is going to be conferring with his vestry or his folks, his higher ups, his lower downs,
mm-hmm.
to see if he could assist you in starting an alternate warming center program that would be in addition to the infamous warming program that's currently
Phil Posner and my proposal to Joel was, and in fact you brought it to our attention, that Joel had said at one point that he would be willing to open up the parish hall on nights other than those that were, you know, being used for the triggering temperatures that dictate whether the warming center is in operation. So we approached Father Joel, and I talked to him today. He had not spoken to his vestry, but he did receive a letter from Phil and I kind of outlining what our proposal would be, and he was saying to me that he was trying to get the, he'll be asking the vestry to approve a pilot project, which would be about 5 nights, see how it goes, with triggering temperatures of 40 degrees or rain. So
that's a step better than Brent Adams' program at the moment.
I think it's just different. We're not trying to recreate a warming center. They're doing yeoman work. They're sheltering people. But for us, it's what we call the depot shelter at Calvary, or the shelter depot at Calvary. One of the two. That kind of fills
dream has been to kind of get shelter for folks just to be able to sleep, and we've been working on safe spaces and working on RV safe spaces, and really to no avail, as you know. But this is outside of city government, which you often advocated. If you want to get something done, you're going to have to do it yourself. So we're hopeful, and when I talked to Joel today, you know, my feeling was that he thought that he could convince the vestry to let us do this. So if that's the case, then I think next week, that certainly there will be, you know, those temperatures are going to be happening. So we may very well do, you know, Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday over at Calvary, and it just would be, it's an emergency shelter. We're not trying to compete with the warming center, nor do we want to. They don't need folks really to supplement their program. They're doing fine on their own, but we think, you know, any night extra that we can shelter people is a good thing.
No, of course. I'm noting that Brent's concern was he doesn't have any hard and fast rules about weather and rain, but his problem is he has, as I imagine you do too, a limit on the number of volunteers that are available and the resources that are available.
Now, you know what? I have never been challenged by a lack of volunteers. You know, I've done a lot of kind of community events around town, Thanksgiving dinners, Christmas dinners, Festival of Delmo Paul, Project Homeless Connect, all those things. And so I have really a long list of volunteers that I think that I can count on, you know, particularly to staff. You know, beginning one night a week, I can't imagine that we couldn't do that. And, I mean, I'll be there myself, certainly, and maybe one or two others. So, you know, we were able to do that pretty much with the Freedom Sleepers, you know. Somebody, when we had the Freedom Sleepers sleepouts going with large numbers of people, we really only had one or two people who were staying awake throughout the night, kind of keeping an eye on stuff. And there's really not much more in the way of supervision than that you need, you know, take care of, you know, make sure the grounds are safe, you know, make sure everybody's kind of bedded down. You know, those, I don't think those are real challenges, frankly, staffing-wise.
Another issue that's come up, and we're talking with Steve Plaich of the Homeless Legal Persons Assistance Project, are you still have time to receive calls from folks with legal concerns?
Oh, sure, absolutely, yeah.
And that number,
I mean,
would
be... I get busier and busier all the time, but, you know, I do that. I probably talk to a dozen people a week for one reason, one thing or another. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from garden variety, well, I got a camping van ticket, which is, as you know, less frequent now because the CPD seems loath to really be giving out camping van tickets in light of Bellevue Boys in that whole thing, which is a larger conversation. Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to help people and, you know, for, you know, legal assistance I can, and including the housed, perhaps someone who had received a ticket for being in the park after dark.
Indeed. So your phone number is 466-6078, if I'm not mistaken.
It is. Yeah, it's never changed.
466, for those who want to reach Steve Plaich, 466-6078. Steve, you also have been privy to the secret meetings with Don Lane, Phil Posner, Micah Posner, and others, Herb Schwartz, who are kicking around Lane's proposal to eliminate sleeping from the camping ordinance as a term.
Yeah, we just had our first meeting today, and it was a good one. There were probably 15 people in attendance, you know, people like Esther Greenberg from the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, who you, I don't know whether you met her, but certainly you were there when they passed their recommendation for RV safe spaces for women at risk. Stacey Falls was a member, was there today, Scott Galloway, Ollie, of course, Rabbi Phil, Jim Weller, as I mentioned, Jim's name. A good group, also Megan Joseph from United Way, so just kind of a group of local organizers to begin the work of strategizing about generating some community support. And really, it's better, those are just the initial folks. I think everybody that has any interest in trying to eliminate a sleeping ban in Santa Cruz is going to be part of this whole effort. So it's not so secretive as it is kind of a working group to begin with, which we've had experience with before.
A secretive only in the sense that the Freedom Sleepers, other than you and Phil, were not called in to join in.
Well, and the Freedom Sleepers, of course, now with Abby, Keith, and yourself, all everybody in the Freedom Sleepers Kevin Rockwell, in fact, was part of this group today. Everybody is aware of what's going on. You know, there aren't any secrets being kept. And as I say, as we move forward, everybody's going to have to, you know, pull their oars in the same direction because it's going to be a tough sled to get it done.
Yeah, well, it'd be nice if the folks that have done the hardest work and worked the longest on this issue were not excluded from these meetings, as some of us have
it's
been.
It's a working group. I don't think it's so much an exclusion as you want to get a group that's manageable and figure out kind of what your strategy is going to be.
Yeah, I don't think so. But in any case, I do appreciate the information you're passing on to us. Don Lane comes from on high and gives you the proposal that he intends to put forward, or is he putting it out for general comment and discussion?
Well, we had a pretty broad range of discussion, and I think everybody had a comment about, you know, tweaking his proposal. You know, eliminating all references to sleeping bags, for instance, that suggested using a camping definition that's more akin to what Capitola does, and you can look at Capitola's definition of camping, which seems a little more specific, and so would be a lot easier for us to figure out what enforcement's going to look like, you know, post passage of the amendment, if it does. So there is still some considerable tweaking going on, which was welcomed by, you know, Don and Micah and everybody there.
So is this proposal been concretized into a legal format that is going to be presented? I know I saw something in the form of a proposed staff report and proposed legal change.
At this point, that really hasn't been changed. Although there was, you know, some considerable discussion, particularly from Rabbi Phil, who was concerned about the reference to sleeping bags. There were, you know, some concern about, you know, blankets and what constituted camping and whether or not you could actually sleep without it looking like camping. So, but there wasn't really any, at this point, substantive changes made to it. I think we're going to try to go with what we've got to excise as much of the references of sleep out of this camping ban. As you know, people mistakenly call our camping ban only a camping ban. It's actually a sleeping ban as well. So we're trying to remedy that part of it one step at a time.
Did Pam Comstock and Rochelle Naroyan show up, perhaps?
No, they're not part of the initial working group either, but we'll certainly be, as we did with, you know, in past with SCRAM and with the DSAL work, and even to a certain extent earlier with the Freedom Sleepers, you know, we're going to be going around talking to all the council members and, you know, having the conversations.
How about old-time activists like Sherry Connable?
Sherry was not there, and I don't know whether she was invited or not, but certainly she's on Don's radar as a local organizer, so maybe she, you know, I'm sure there were some people who were invited who just couldn't make it.
Mm-hmm. And when's the next meeting of this group, and where, and what is intended at that meeting?
Well, we're not really certain exactly what's going to happen as we move forward meeting-wise. What we're doing is we're going out individually now and organizing, talking to labor leaders, talking to the council members, organizing meetings with the neighborhood groups, front of the Santa Cruz Democratic Club. I think Phil Posner is going to make a presentation at the People's Democratic Club meeting this evening at 6:30. So I would be there and help him with that, but I've got a SCORE meeting at the same time, so it's a conflict for me. But we're already going out and just using kind of Don's memo as a template. And a lot of it is, you know, it's for public policy because of the threat of litigation through Bellevue Boise, the threat of, you know, reduced funds through HUD because, you know, the federal government is frowning on camping bans as a policy. And, of course, it has, you know, a very well-taken point that it's just basically torture. You know, it's a human rights violation. So all of that, as you saw, was in Don's memo, and we're going to be using that in a kind of reduced form as a talking point so we go out and have these discussions.
Now, this was originally going to be, I guess, on the agenda, according to Micah, back in December, even earlier. Now, and then we heard from Don it was in January, and now we're talking about February, or is there any
it's
date
still
now?
Looking like February, but not on the 9th, because evidently the 9th is going to be all taken up by this. There's some discussion about where Shakespeare's Santa Cruz is going to be, which is like, you know, one of the, as you know, one of the real contentious issues in town. So the fear is that we want to go on and get a whole meeting that's focused entirely on, you know, whether or not Shakespeare Santa Cruz could have some home in Santa Cruz somewhere, and have the sleeping man discussion, which is going to be a long one, broad-ranging one, pushed aside, because we're also hoping to revisit when we go to before council on this, to, you know, keep talking about, you know, safe sleeping zones and safe RV zones, sleeping zones, and those kinds of things. So it's all going to be part of that conversation. So I want to make sure that the focus when we get there is going to be pretty much entirely on this and not on other matters.
Did you get any look-see into the city council meeting coming up next Tuesday as to what items are on that agenda that might impact poor people and unhoused people?
I didn't, and I don't think that it's even out yet. I think probably tomorrow they'll post it. I think that's not Friday. Maybe tonight. Yeah, I did. If they post it tonight, I haven't been downtown yet, so I haven't really gotten a chance to take a look at it.
Well, just make sure you don't go to City Hall after 10 o'clock at night.
I can if I want to look at my Brown Act notices.
Robert Cohen says so. Well, I don't know about that. Well, listen, thank you, Steve. And again, if you want to contact Steve, he's at 466-6078.
Yes,
that's
indeed.
Steve Plaich. He's with a number of groups. He'll be giving us the update on a score, no doubt. We'll be endorsing ending the sleeping ban.
Yes, absolutely. As will the ACLU. And in fact, I'm on my way to community television for the volunteer advisory committee meeting. So always something to do.
Well, thank you for calling in, Steve.
All right. Take care of yourself. And I mean that.
Hey, thank you, man.
All right.
Bye-bye. So we're on the line with Phil Posner, who's been going to one meeting after another today, I imagine. But he also has a meeting tomorrow at 1:30. Earlier we talked to Louise Drummond, his wife, who's facing a trial next week. Your trial is coming up.
The trial is tomorrow.
Right, but I think her trial comes up on the 26th. That's what she's told me.
Well, we think that he's going to combine them.
Oh, okay. So that's going to be at 1:30 tomorrow in Department 1?
Yeah.
And I think that's probably going to be Paul Maragonda, since Burdick is off the bench there.
Uh-oh.
I could be wrong about that. It could be Burdick is keeping the case. I'm not sure. But I know you, I talked to Louise about, you know, what we had talked about, you and I, previously, that you were going to make, you had considered making a stand, saying something to the effect of, you know, the right to sleep is an important right, the right to be, I don't know what you're going to say, the right to be at City Hall, you know, at the seat of government to demand that right to sleep is important, too. But at one point you talked about, you know, the importance of even risking jail for that. Is that still part on the agenda?
It's not. I would risk jail, but it would. The problem is that if I don't pay, if I'm found guilty and they sentence me to some volunteer work, and I don't do that, then I think, as you know, they can take property, my car, house, and stuff like that. So if it weren't for that, I would say to the judge, if you find me guilty, I'm willing to go to jail.
Well, you can say that. You can say to the judge, I would prefer to have my community service converted to jail time. Will you do that?
Okay, I might do that.
I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying that is an option you have, that's all. And the judge, she has, or he has, the option to say yes or no. So, some of us will be coming tomorrow at 1:30 to your court to see how that goes in Department 1, and I invite members of the audience to come to 701 Ocean Street, the main courtroom building, and check out this situation, because people were not arrested for sleeping at night around the Freedom Sleepers. They were instead arrested for being in the park area after dark.
Did you notice that, as I said to you, and when I emailed with the pictures, thanks for the pictures, that I was actually cited for, how do I say it, standing on the sidewalk.
Standing on the sidewalk.
Did you read my things I sent to everybody?
Say that again?
Pedestrians must yield right of way outside of crosswalks.
That's
what I was charged with.
This is a claim of jaywalking, which is not true as far as I know, unless, it depends. If you refuse to move for a vehicle, That could be construed.
Well, of course, and as you well know, that evening those big arc lights were out, so there was no danger of me being in the. You know, it was totally ludicrous.
And that's what you're being charged with tomorrow?
Well, I was charged with the other one, but also this one.
Well, that's very interesting.
One time I was charged with being in park after dark, and the other one I was charged with this one.
Yeah, I do not believe that is a definition of jaywalking. But again, it's a problem of, you know, many months later lining up your witnesses and so forth. So I wish you luck with that, and I will be curious to see what happens. Also, I know that you've been working on the issue, obviously, of ending the sleeping ban. You've been doing this even before the Freedom Sleepers started, in fact, significantly before that. And you've met today with a gaggle of politicians and other community leaders who are supporting Don Lane's proposal to strike the word sleeping from the current camping ordinance. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, in the second week of the second council meeting in February, Don is going to propose what you basically said, removing the ban against sleeping and the reference to a blanket, and probably a sleeping bag.
Mm-hmm. And I know that this was, you had a fairly large meeting, I understand. I talked to Steve Plaich about it, about 20 people this afternoon.
Right. They're basically people that I call them the strategy committee. It's the committee of people that he values their judgment to strategize the way that we can win the issue.
Uh-huh. And was there any, was it all simply about sort of gathering around Lane's proposal, or did people actually have some different points of view that they encouraged him to add to it?
No, there were different points of view.
What were those different points of view?
Well, Herb, I forget his last name.
Schwartz, I think.
What?
Might be Schwartz or Schultz, I'm not sure.
Yeah, anyway, Herb spoke about the general history of the sleeping ban, and, you know, others talked about the issue of the sleeping ban and other things that we need to do, so it was a good meeting.
Uh-huh. You got no specifics about to bring any alternate proposals or broadening proposals. Fundamentally, matter of...
We did discuss Micah's proposal.
Which was?
And there has to be a decision whether after Don's is hopefully passed, we then go to Micah's proposal, which, as you know, is a concept of rotating or permanent in place provided by the city of a homeless depot. Not a shelter, but a homeless depot. Oh,
and what is a homeless depot for this purpose?
It's a shelter, but it's not a warming shelter.
So what does that mean?
It means that people have to leave. Well, I guess it's similar.
In other words, you know, you have... You know, some of these rather expensive, very limited shelters, which, you know, actually don't even exist as walk-in shelters other than the Winter Armory shelter, which even that is arguably not a walk-in shelter because you have to have an ID card.
Well, we may have other things going about that, too. I don't know if Steve spoke to you about that, but I got to go.
So you don't have time to talk to us about that right now?
No, because it's Steve working on it. We don't have an answer right now, but it's something else we're working on. So we've got a lot of coals in the fire.
So but Micah's proposal specifically, which is what I was asking you about.
Micah's proposal is off the agenda, and Micah and Don have to decide at what point they want to put that more or less on the agenda.
What is his...
Of course, we want to see how Don's things go.
I understand, Phil, but what is his proposal? I don't understand.
Who, Micah's proposal?
Yeah.
You've seen it. It was sent to you 2 months ago.
Can you remind me, please?
It's a proposal to ask the city to find places, including parts of a park or garage sites, et cetera, where people would be able to sleep.
I appreciate that, and I hope you fare well tomorrow in court, Phil.
Thanks.
Talk to you then.
And I hope you feel better. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's about it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'll be back on Sunday, perhaps, and probably. If not with a current show, then with a replay of one you haven't heard in years, and perhaps one that has some recent relevance. If you want to get hold of me between times, do give me a call, 423-4833. Stay tuned for Uncle Dennis's From the Cream to the Dregs.
Another hour, half of nonstop music. Glad to be of assistance for you. And here we go.